Young'uns Podcast. Previously on the Young'uns Podcast.
I sounded professional there, didn't I?
There you go. Maybe you made a mistake with Mark Radcliffe. It's not too late to reconsider BBC. There's a new director general in town. I might write him a letter. I'll sort this out. Don't worry. Oh, this is good. Keep doing that, David.
I mean, I've heard a rumour that you're going to do the most ambitious project yet, and you're going to do your entire back catalogue with panpipes.
How did that get leaked?
I know.
I can't believe it.
And it's exclusive to the Young'uns Podcast. I was only joking, but now it's been proved. You've said it now. You can't go back on your words, Becky.
All aboard! Let's go!
It's the Young'uns Podcast. 113. Coming up, did David Hasselhoff end the Cold War? That is the question that journalist, author and folk music blogger Emma Hartley investigates in her book. And just as I spit, I don't know if you can hear this, listen. Oh, bloody typical, isn't it? Look. Pretty ice cream van. Did that on purpose. It's as if someone from a rival podcast has thought, I'm going to try everything in my power to stop this podcast happening. Look at that. So professional at the start there. Right. Basically, what I was trying to say before I was rudely interrupted by the sound of an ice cream van was that we're going to speak to Emma Hartley on the phone, who's a journalist and author and folk music blogger, and she's got a book out called Did David Hasselhoff End the Cold War? She's coming up on the show later on. I wasn't going to do a Young'uns in the Mix this week. I was going to wait till the next week. But a Young'uns in the Mix has presented itself, spontaneously and organically presented itself, and so this week's Young'uns in the Mix comes courtesy of the Young'un's very own Sean Cooney and his malfunctioning car stereo. Earlier this week, I made what I thought was quite a shocking discovery. I think I've discovered the world's most cynically and cheaply produced football song, and I'm going to play it to you on this week's podcast. We'll see what you think about that. I'll also be talking about the National Portrait Gallery from a blind man's perspective. That shouldn't be too difficult for me to do because I am blind, and I went to the National Portrait Gallery. We'll be talking about that. Weave an anecdote about supermarkets, and as well as that, I'm going to be telling you about an interesting pulling technique that I witnessed on a London train. All that and more coming up on this, the 113th Young'uns Podcast, which this week is entitled I Smell Woman. All will be revealed. And the ice cream van hasn't been back. I'm paranoid now. I couldn't concentrate on that because I was waiting for the ice cream van to happen and it didn't happen, which almost annoyed me more than if it did happen. Just the sort of the anticipation of it. So the music bed that we have over the top of that where I tell you what's going on, although actually we normally use Foursquare and that's what we were using this week and we have been using for the last few weeks on the podcast. It's called Egypt by Foursquare. But I think maybe in future though we might use the sound of an ice cream van. I might actually just do that because I did. Part of me was annoyed about it and then another part of me was thinking, actually, this works quite well. Anyway, so this music bed that we use comes from Foursquare. We've had Jim Molyneux from the band Foursquare on a previous Young'uns podcast. And this is the first Young'uns podcast of the year. And so I've not been able to talk about this until now. What sometimes will happen is I'll now and again go on Twitter and I'll have a look at the different people that I'm following on Twitter. So you've got all the different folk people that the Young'uns are following. And someone will say something, a folk performer or someone will say something on Twitter. And I think, my goodness, that's interesting. I'm going to have to talk about that on the podcast. And one such event has arisen. This is the first time that I've actually used Twitter to generate content. I've held back until now. But when you hear what it's about, you'll see why I'd had to use it on this occasion. And I will be using it in the future. But, you know, I'm not going to use Twitter for everything. I don't want folk performers just to think, oh, I can put any old thing on. If it's mildly interesting, David will just use it for the podcast. No, it has to be. It's got to be something that I look at on Twitter and then think, right, this is it. The listeners need to know more. I owe it to the listeners. This is the kind of thing the BBC aren't covering on their folk show, and I need to do this. I'm complimentary. You've got the serious folk stuff going on Radio 2, doing absolutely brilliantly. But then there's this kind of thing, which isn't being talked about on Radio 2. Mike Harding ignored it. I'd have thought he would have done it on his last show. Yeah, I know he had it probably all planned and that kind of thing, but I thought he'd cast it aside and he would talk about this with Jim Baldinieu from Foursquare. He ignored it. Then Mark Radcliffe. Yeah, I know they had Bellowhead on, but you'd have thought maybe they could have said, drop a song, lads, from your set, because we've got to talk about this. Jim Baldinieu has made a startling revelation on Twitter. So the tweet made in December went thus. He wrote, "Been practicing my cat impressions recently. Sounding nice." So I thought we'd give him a call. He doesn't know why I'm calling him. He knows I'm going to call him, but he doesn't know why I'm calling him. I just said I've got a question for him. We're going to give him a call. We're going to find out why he's doing cat, why he's been practicing cat impressions. And then we're going to hear his cat impression, okay? Now, bearing in mind, he wrote this in December and he was practicing then. If he's kept his practice up, he should be an expert by now. So we're in for a treat, listeners. We're in for an exemplary performance of a cat impression, I think. So let's give him a call, let's find out what this is all about, and then we'll play Foursquare, and then we'll get on with the rest of the podcast.
Hello?
Hello, Jim.
Hi, how are we?
Very good, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, good.
Or should I say, Jim, and you may think this is a bit of an odd question, but you may not. Should I say meow, are you? Now, are you aware of why I might say that, Jim?
I've got a sort of inkling. I'm not really sure.
Oh, this is interesting. Well, tell me your inkling.
This might be completely unrelated. Hmm. But in rehearsals, I have cat noise. I do quite a convincing cat noise.
Oh, right. No, I didn't know about that, but I think it is associated then. The reason is, this is the first podcast of the year, Jim. And of course, I always, when I'm thinking about things for the podcast, now and again, I will look on Twitter and see what the folk stars are up to, Jim. You know, this public noise, what are the folk stars up to? And this is the first time I've actually used Twitter like this before, because people aren't writing anything interesting, Jim. But one story that I thought had to be brought to the public's attention was something that you wrote in December. So yes, it was quite a long time ago. You wrote, "Been practicing my cat impressions, sounding nice." And I thought, we've got to. When the podcast starts up again, we've got to find out why. So we've kind of found out that you do cat noises in rehearsals. Why? Why do you do that, Jim?
it kind of stems from, I was just kind of messing around making cat noises.
As you do, we've all been there.
Yeah, as you do, exactly. And then I was walking along a corridor in college where I study. I absently made this cat noise, and there was quite a posh teacher at the other end of the corridor who turned around and looked towards me. So I did a deadpan face so that he wouldn't suspect that it was me. And he went, "A cat? A cat?" And then turned around and walked off.
Well, Jim, little do you know that that teacher, as far as you're concerned, you might think that was just a little joke that you've played. You might be very proud of yourself. What happens if that teacher's had a nervous breakdown? Are you aware of the welfare of that teacher? I mean, have you looked for the welfare of that teacher there? I mean, you know, they might think they've been hallucinating, Jim.
Clearly wasn't a cat in college.
Well, exactly. So you could have, who knows what damage you might have done. But we're not focusing on that. We're focusing on the lighter side of this. Before we go, we should definitely have the cat noise. But before that, because we've actually got you on the phone, I suppose we might as well ask you if there's any kind of news that you might want to impart in general. I mean, what's going on with Foursquare? What's going on with yourself?
Well, yeah, we're planning an October tour at the moment.
All right.
Trying to put all the dates together for that. Hopefully our new album will be out by then.
Oh, brilliant. Oh, well, make sure you keep us posted about that, because we'll definitely have to play on. So is there anything that you can... Well, last time we talked about the way that you made music was kind of, you had this sort of notepad file open and you kind of wrote it all. You had this weird kind of way of doing music where it wasn't so much a score. It was kind of like just a text file almost, where you just said, "Oh, this person will come in at 17 bars."
Yeah, exactly. Sort of ramblings on a text file.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So are you going to use the same process? Is there anything particularly new, avant-garde approaches?
Not as such. We've gone for a slightly more stripped-back approach, really. More songs. Definitely more songs.
Oh, okay,
We're all feeling more confident as singers than we used to, so...
Oh, brilliant. Excellent. Yeah. Look forward to that. Will there be a cat impression? Will there be cat noises on the album, Jim?
There won't be any cat noises on the album.
No. Is that a decision you've definitely made, or would public pressure, perhaps?
Well, no. I mean... I suppose I said that quite definitively, but...
You did.
I might try and sneak one in somewhere, if I can.
Yeah, I think a surreptitious cat noise would be good. Yeah, I mean, are you doing it... Do you know who you're producing it with already? Are you...
Oh, we're doing it ourselves. Yeah.
So you could surreptitiously do it. Are you going to be the main man doing the production?
Yeah, I am. Yeah.
Right, Jim. Okay. What I think you should do, Jim, what you should do is you should give them a master copy with the files, but don't put the cat noise on, and then just put cat noises all over the top of the album. And so when they get it, they're like, what the hell's going on here? Sorry, I just had to. It wasn't my master copy.
A whole track of cat noises.
I know what you're like, Jim. That, you're going to run with it, my friend. And the album.
Yeah, it could happen.
That's going to be, and they're going to be really annoyed when you get the royalties from that track, because they're not really going to be credited on it. Mark Radcliffe plays it, opening song on his show. It then becomes an award-winning song, best folk song. Sorry, Emily Portman. Sorry, Lucy Ward.
And then there could be a musical made about it.
It could be a musical about cats. It sounds a bit far-fetched, my friend, but you never know. Could we have the cat noise now? Do you do different types of cat noises, incidentally, or is it just the one cat noise that you do?
Not such. It's just a solitary mew.
Solitary mew. My goodness. Well, let's hear it then. So pray silence, people. I'm just gonna leave a sort of a 2-second gap just so people can appreciate the moment, and then I'll leave a 2-second gap afterwards and we can kind of appreciate it within the context of life, Jim. Here we go.
Yeah, of course. Here we go.
Oh, Jim. Jim, I've never felt that way about someone before, and
I think I should
go before. I mean, I'm trying to concentrate on doing a podcast, my friend, and I just find that far too erotic at this stage of the podcast, to be quite frank with you. I'm going to play a song now. Excellent. Brilliant to talk to you, Jim. It's quite a strange...
Thank you for phoning.
Pressing question. And we'll probably see you over the summer, I would imagine.
Yeah, hopefully.
Yeah, you're doing. Nice. Are you doing quite a few? Are you doing festivals this summer?
We're not doing tons with Foursquare. Right. The old dance school are doing a few though.
Of course, yes, the old dance school. Yeah, it's going well.
It is. Yeah. All good.
Excellent. Well. All right then, Jim. So, well, goodbye to you, and goodbye to the cat as well, of course.
Excellent. And goodbye to yourself.
Thank you very much. Jim Molyneux from Foursquare and from the old dance school. Let's play some Foursquare, and then we'll get into this Young'uns podcast. Well, actually, let's see what it sounds like with a bit of... cat over the top. Let's find Jim's cat noise. Here we are. There we are. Isolate that. Right. Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, this is how the album could have sounded. And this is kind of a sneak preview to something that you might be able to expect in future releases of Foursquare's material. So it's the Jim Molyneux cat remix. Yes. Oh, yes. Oh, that is good. I like it. I can imagine them remastering this. Remastering the album. With this track on. Now, this will get them signed. Navigator are probably listening now going, oh, my goodness, we've got to sign this. This is unbelievable. April Snow from Foursquare. And before that, we spoke to Jim Molyneux from Foursquare, the cat impersonator extraordinaire. You're probably here on Radio 2 now. You're probably hearing Mark Radcliffe going, now we have a cat impersonator on the programme who's also a folk singer. Absolutely brilliant stuff. Let's hear him. And he'll sing a folk song and he'll do his cat impersonation. He'll win a Sony Award. Will he credit me? No. Then the next week, he'll have an ice cream fan on his show. Oh, bloody hell, I've been interrupted by an ice cream van. The bit where Mark Radcliffe was doing his radio show, the next thing you know, you can hear an ice cream van, you know, from the studio window outside. He opens the window, and that'll win a Sony Award as well. Unbelievable. As always, we intersperse the brilliant items, such as cat impersonations and interviews with journalists, with clips from Young'un's gigs. We're going to head to London in a minute, but first, from the folk festival in Sheffield that we recently did, a supermarket-based anecdote.
My mum and dad, and I phoned my dad during the week, and he said, you know, guess what, I was in Asda, and you know how in Asda they have those sample things that they set up on a little stand, you know, and there might be cheese or it might be juice or something. He said, do you know what it was? I went over to it, and it was a big bowl, and it looked like little biscuits. Do you know what it was? It was bloody cat food. I say, oh, what do they expect to do?
You bring your cat along. This one is even when they kind of like it. The cat's going to be a bit disconsolate because he's not got enough. He's been here trying his little bits, so I'm going to be happy. So what's the sample based on? It's nothing. But that's Asda price.
And there we are. There's another example of a cat cropping up on the podcast. What a brilliant podcast this is. So cleverly woven together. And now we join another Young'un's gig. We move from Sheffield to London.
Now, we all arrived in London at a different time today from different directions, but apparently, Dave, you had quite an eventful afternoon.
I did. I always thought I'd try out some of the tourist spots. So I met up with my friend Ben, who's in London, and he said, just out of interest, I Googled places for blind people to go, because I'm blind. He says, places for blind people to go.
It's not just an elaborate veneer.
No,
he's actually blind.
We just do this. We thought, what niches can we have? We've got the idiot, as in Michael, there. A blind man, perhaps. Sean, in the second half, will become a Jew. So look forward to that.
Ticking those boxes, dear.
Of course. And what happened was, there was three choices that came up, but the one of them was the Cutty Sark, the ship, the Cutty Sark, where apparently blind, it was brilliant for blind people, because blind people could touch, it said, they can touch old rope and old wood.
Well, at least his luck was
well,
in.
Well, exactly, which is
worth that train ticket, David.
Not worth that train. Touch the old rope and old wood, and also smell tea. I'm like, so you imagine like going, what's a typical blind day? Well, I touched some old rope and some old wood. I did a bit of tea sniffing. But it's weird the way it's like sort of all put, because like, what happens when a blind person, because like smelling tea is not really that, is that much of a brilliant thing? I mean, what happens when a blind person walks, we got a blind person walking in, Bentley, put the kettle on, brew a massive cup of tea, the blind man's in tonight. We've been waiting for this. The other one was from the library, the British Library, where it said it was a touch tour, and it said, our librarians are happy to give you a feel. I thought, my goodness, that's going to be interesting. We didn't go for that. We went to the National Portrait Tour. I'm going to break this up. I'm going to keep you keen. So find out what happened in the National Portrait Tour a little bit later on. But first,
we're going to have our interview with Emma Hartley. Journalist, author, folk music blogger. She's got a blog on folk music called Emma Hartley's Glamour Cave. And we're going to be talking about her authored work. Did David Hasselhoff end the Cold War? We're going to be doing that very shortly. But first, it's her journalism that I want to talk about briefly. Now, Emma doesn't know I'm about to talk about this. So this is going to be quite interesting. See what repercussions it has for me. But I've never been one to shirk from the truth, ladies and gentlemen. I was having a chat with Emma on Twitter. So we're having a bit of a Twitter conversation. And I was saying about, you know, she'll have to come on the podcast and this kind of thing. We're having a bit of the chat just sort of progressed onto other stuff. A couple of days later, I got a message on Facebook. And she asked me a question. She said, oh, you know how you said you were going to go professional? The Young'uns are going professional next year. Which we are, for those people who don't know. We're going to, we quit our sort of full-time jobs. We're all going to do different bits of freelance work, and that's so that we can dedicate a bit more time to the young'un stuff. He said, oh, well, I've been speaking to Ben Walker and Jocelyn Clark. Absolutely brilliant artists, and we'll be speaking to them on a future Young'uns podcast. We've got that lined up. She said, they've just signed to Navigator, which is the label that we're on. She said, have you got any advice for them? Not massively, but I thought, well, okay, she's obviously... Maybe she's had a little chat with them at some point, and, you know, she just thought it'd be nice if maybe I can help them out. So I kind of told them a few things, and I said, well, basically, make sure you read the contract, because obviously... You know, it's common sense, but... And I said, you know, and it also depends on... And I mentioned a few other things. I mentioned that for us, it hadn't necessarily been financially brilliant because we were part-time. So that because of our jobs and that kind of thing. I just thought she was basically asking this out of interest. I thought it was just a conversation. Bearing in mind we'd been speaking on Twitter and Facebook a couple of times before that, I thought she was just being friendly. So I was a bit shocked when the next day I got a tweet. And it said, read an article with David Eagle from the Young'uns, who talks about the trials and tribulations of signing to Navigator Records, or whatever it said, something like that. I haven't got the tweet here. I haven't saved that tweet. I only save tweets about cat impersonations. I thought, what? I even talked about what? And then I suddenly thought, what, that conversation I had yesterday on the train? She's made an article out of it. And sure enough, there was an article there going, David warns, make sure you read the contract. And I'm like, hang on a second, I didn't say it like this. And yet, she'd quoted, I'm not saying she'd misquoted me, she hadn't misquoted me. She'd written everything that I'd said, but she published it as an article. I don't want to make a big thing out of it, because I've not said anything wrong, and she's not really uncovered anything particularly profound, but I just thought it was a friendly chat. I just thought we were having a conversation. You know, I didn't realise, I mean, I should have, I'm an idiot. She's a journalist, for goodness sake. I'm not really that annoyed, because I didn't say anything that bad. But at one point on Facebook, she wrote, so what you're saying is the terms and conditions for the artist aren't particularly favourable. Now, I denied that, fortunately, but what if I hadn't? I thought our conversation was off the record. It was quite clearly on the record. And I'm just wondering now with Emma, you know, maybe I should have talked about this to her on the phone. It maybe seems a bit disingenuous before the interview then to do this. I don't know. But never mind. She can always have the right to reply. She'll probably write about this in her blog, and then I'll be annoyed about what she's written in her blog about what about me, and then I'll talk about that on the podcast, and then she'll be annoyed about that, and she'll blog about it, and then the whole thing will just be this self-perpetuating thing that just falls in on each other. And basically, all we're doing is just talking about each other, constantly getting more and more irate about the things that we're doing, you know, the things that we're saying, and we just provoke it. And no, we haven't even got an audience anymore. The audience have stopped listening. They've stopped reading. They're not bothered anymore. The only people who are bothered are ourselves. We just keep going and going, and we're getting more and more angry at each other, and we just, until eventually the whole thing just implodes upon itself, and then comes, I think it'll just come to its inevitable logical conclusion. And what beautiful children they shall be. It's kind of like the equivalent of me ringing someone up on the podcast, but not telling them that they're on the podcast, and then just having an interview with them. So how are things in your personal life? You know, they're all right. Oh, well, it's a bit of a problem, actually. I've got a weird growth. Well, Gavin Davenport's coming on the next podcast next week. So what if I say, Gavin Davenport comes on the podcast and exclusively talks about his odd growth that he's got, that he's a bit worried about. Click here for more. So anyway, don't worry about it, ladies and gentlemen, because you know for a fact that I'm not going to take this lying down. Anyone who's... Don't cross me. Emma, listen to this. Don't cross me, basically, because I'm not the kind of man you want to reckon with. You're not the kind of man you want to pick a fight with. You are now going to be the victim of a revenge attack. So... What I did, listeners, was I managed to glean a bit of information before we started the podcast interview. She thought she wasn't on the podcast when she was telling me this stuff. Little did she know that I was going to play it. I said, you know, I didn't say this. I said this, we're going to start the interview shortly, I said to her. We're going to start the interview shortly, but first, and I just had a little bit of a chat. I said, let's just have a little chat. And my goodness, did she talk. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the stuff that Emma Hartley didn't think would be on the podcast, but that I am now going to reveal to you. This is revenge. So this is what she revealed to me. Here we go. So what's today had in store then? What have you done? Oh, this is not for the podcast. I'm just going to take a drink of water and then we'll get set up. So while we're doing that, we might as well have a little bit of an informal chat like we're actually friends or something, Emma. What have you been up to?
Well, I went for a run in the park.
A run in the park. Interesting. Interesting stuff. So you got that exclusive. I wasn't going to put that on the podcast. That was a personal conversation between me and her. But now, because of what she did to me, I've revealed that. So there we are. Run in the park. Write that down, listeners. Use that information.
And then I went to the gym for an hour.
A gym for an hour. Right. Get that on your blogs, people. Get that on your blogs. She went for a run in the park. Then she went to the gym for an hour. Now,
Some people miss it. Right, go easy on the girl. You've got the information now, David. That's it. Start the interview. I'm sorry, but I think she deserves a little bit more. I think she deserves a little bit more. So I went in harder. I went in harder. That's what I do, ladies. I went in harder. Listen to this.
It's my day off, basically. And so it's seemed like a good opportunity to do some exercise, possibly my only opportunity this week.
Have you been doing some weights as well?
Or? Yes.
Was she doing aerobic exercise or was she doing weights? My goodness, she fell into my trap, listeners. She fell into my trap. Listen to what she said.
I have, yeah. I've got some weights for my arms.
She's got weights for her arms. My goodness, she just falls straight into my trap, headlong. What kilograms are you up to then? I went further. I asked her what kilograms. You'd have thought by now she might have started smelling a rat. Just completely naive. Thinks she can get away with it. Thinks that I haven't got the journalistic nous to sniff out a story. Emma did it with such nonchalance. Just like we're having a conversation, really. Little did she know. My goodness, she's listening to this thing. Oh, my God, what else did I say? What else did I say?
I can't remember. I was just thinking I should probably get some slightly heavier ones. Six kilograms.
6 kilograms, ladies and gentlemen. What have we ascertained there? She has 6 kilogram weights for her arms at the moment. She is thinking, however, of upgrading her weights. Now, I stopped there. I thought, when she hears this on the podcast, she's going to be tearing her hair. And I thought, leave the woman alone. I'm sure she's learned a lesson now. So let's call it equal, Emma. Let's call it one all, shall we, okay? We can be friends again now. Oh, now for her interview. But despite all that, she's a very good author. She's produced a brilliant book. We're going to talk about it now. This is the actual, real interview that she knew was being broadcast for the podcast. Hello, Emma Hartley.
Hello, David.
It's the right answer. What an excellent start to the interview. And this is the first, one of the first interviews of the year. This is the first podcast of the year. So things getting off to a good start already. Let's just hope it doesn't go downhill too rapidly. Did David Hasselhoff win the Cold War? So you have sort of put together a compendium of facts, as it were, 50 facts that we really need to know, which includes the answer, or at least ruminations on, did David Hasselhoff win the Cold War? So
end the Cold War.
End the Cold War. Did he win the Cold War is another thing. All right, okay. You think that's... I told you things would go downhill rapidly from here. I'm just doing this. Let me explain what's happening, Emma. I'm doing this, and throughout the interview, I'm going to do a few journalistic tests on you, because obviously you're a journalist. I'm going to get a few factual things wrong, and you've got to correct me every single time I do that. So well done for that. You've scored 1 point. Okay, so did...
Thank you.
Did David Hasselhoff...
What do I win?
Well, you'll find out a bit later on. So you might not want to play too hard, just in case it's something you don't want. Did David Hasselhoff end the Cold War? So talk to us a little bit about this book and the inspiration for it, then.
It didn't start with David Hasselhoff. It started when a friend of mine, who was a published author with a publisher called Icon, told me that I was wasting my time freelancing around national newspapers in London, and that nobody would ever take me seriously if I didn't write a book. His publisher was looking for young writers to work on a series that they had. And mine was, in the end, the second of their series. The first one was called something like 50 Facts That Should Change the World. And it was it was written by a woman who worked at the BBC, and it was sort of about all the terrible things that are happening in the world.
And there to illustrate terrible things happening is the sound of an ambulance. That is brilliant the way you did that. Well done.
Yeah, thank you. I do my best. But this one was supposed to be about Europe. And I have a background in politics to the extent that I studied at a university and have worked for a couple of politicians. Well, my instinct was to try and write an entertaining book about Europe, because I remember the course I did on it at university was completely impenetrable and rather dull. So I just thought, if there was a way of making the subject interesting, then that would be different, basically, because I've never basically read an interesting book on Europe. What I did was, for each of these 50 chapters, because that was the structure of the book, I found what I hope is a sort of fascinating fact, and then sort of unpacked each one of them to explain what they meant. The Hasselhoff chapter is called David Hasselhoff Had a Role in Ending the Cold War, which is a sort of broad interpretation of the truth. I mean, certainly David Hasselhoff has historically behaved as if he thought he had a role in ending the Cold War, because he was number one in the German charts for about 10 weeks.
Yes.
The summer before the war came down, and with a song called Looking for Freedom. And he sort of took some of the credit for it when the Berlin Wall actually came down. He did a concert this following New Year on top of the wall, and lots of thousands of people held lighters in the air while he sang his song, Looking for Freedom. And then if you kind of spool forward 12 years, he turned up at the what used to be Checkpoint Charlie, which is now a museum, Checkpoint Charlie, and expressed surprising disappointment to the curator there that there was no picture of him on the wall of this museum. Obviously, Checkpoint Charlie was the place where people used to be able to cross from east to west, and it was the end of one regime and the beginning of another, so that's the significance of Checkpoint Charlie. But he obviously felt that there should be some kind of memorial to him there, because basically it was, you know, a museum about the Cold War.
So he actually, because that's really odd, I never really thought about that, about David Hasselhoff. You kind of think of him maybe as a novelty, sort of niche artist, kind of quite kitsch. So the fact that is he actually, maybe he thinks that all of his songs, even the current Jump in My Car and things like that, maybe he thinks everything he does is political and we're just not getting the political subtext.
It's possible.
Yeah.
Possible. Not likely, but possible.
Well, perhaps Jump in My Car, if you think about that, that was the recent song, dude, which I believe got to number one. That could be about car sharing, about the environment, for instance, about the economy. You know, if we car share, that kind of thing. A good political message.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe I think
we've cracked the code. We should write a whole book. Yeah, let's do a collaborative effort, and we're on just a book about David Hasselhoff and all of his political endeavours.
Right, I think you're taking the piss now slightly.
You think so? I've never been accused of doing that before. So are there any plans for any other sort of works of either non-fiction or fiction in the pipeline?
Yes, one of each, actually. Yeah, I've got 10,000 words of a novel that I've been working on for about 5 years. Well, it's not really a novel. It's based on something that actually happened, and I've done an awful lot of research about it.
Right. And is that going to be categorised as fiction then, or non-fiction?
Oh, it's complicated. I was doing it as fiction. Then I got an agent, and she said, "Do it as non-fiction, because if it's true, you should do it as non-fiction." But the trouble is that it's about something to do with espionage that happened during the Second World War. So actually, getting information about it is very hard, because MI6 has released its documents into public domain. Although there's a possibility that I could go to the States and do some research, it's easier actually just to do it as fiction, but then, you know, explain to people that much of it is true. Well, it's got some people in it who everybody kind of knows, and this is the point. It's a slightly amazing story.
I would, a little recommendation, if you're going to make it fiction, I would imagine you should probably take the names out and change them. Just a little thought there, just in case
you
hadn't thought of that.
No, it can't be done, because it's...
Really?
It's,
so you're going to keep the real names in and say this is fiction?
Yeah.
Can you do that?
Two famous actors in it who made a film during World War II in Hollywood, and Winston Churchill wrote the script. So it's kind of hard to change the script.
Yeah, so it's a weird kind of metafiction almost. You've got some weird... You're going to use real characters, but say this is fictional. And then
I know.
And then they'll ring you up and they'll say, well, that's quite a coincidence, because...
No, they're dead. But you see, I've been doing lots of interviews with members of their families. So I know, kind of what really happened. And,
right.
They're all quite happy for me to write about it, so...
Well, this is very cryptic, and we'll look forward to that. So, I mean, obviously, you're not sure about what you're going to do with that, so are we quite far away from a release date?
Yes. No, I haven't got a publisher for that. I think I need to write it, actually, and at that point, hopefully things will take on their own momentum. And then, so, idea for another non-fiction book, which is to do with environmentalism, but that's really early days.
Will David Hasselhoff make an appearance?
No, I shouldn't think so.
My goodness, this is a rude... I've been listening to this, and obviously, sorry about that, but you know, she's got to move on. She can't just write about you all the time. And you can read Emma's folk music blog and find more information about her book. If you type in Emma Hartley's Glamour Cave, that's the name of her folk blog. Now, a live version of our song Harbour Voice, which is from our new album, When Our Grandfather Said No.
When Our Grandfather Said No to what? A request for another Werther's original? Come on!
Yeah, very good. So it's a live version of the Young'un's Harbour Voice.
I hear a voice singing in the harbour. To dream. song, singing in a time that's been. I see a ship sailing past the pierhead, calling me to sail, but it's only the ghost of a brig with nothing
Harbour Voice from the album When Our Grandfathers Said No. Right then, let's go back to London now.
So what did happen at the Royal Portrait Gallery, David?
Yes. The first thing, on the train, when a blind man got on the train right next to me, and I don't know, you could sense in the audience, like my friend Ben was saying, you could sense it on the train that people were going, were wondering, I wonder if they know each other. Should we mention it? He's blind. I mean, he's not with him, but he's blind and he's blind. Is there like a magnetic pull? Do they know? Do they have some sort of sense that kind of it automatically emanates towards each other? I have no idea how the system works. And it was this kind of thing going, but this blind man, I mean, fair on him, but he was right. Was he in his 50s? Where was he in his 50s?
Yeah, he's about 50, yeah.
Yeah, all right, excellent. In his 50s, and he comes on and he goes, ooh, on the tube, he goes, ooh, I smell woman. And then he kind of points at this woman and then starts, so where are you from, me darling? And so we were chatting with her, and I was like, what? Is this how it works? This is why it's all... I thought it was...
This is where you've been going wrong all these years, I think, David.
I mean, it never helps being a folk singer, but now I might be able to ride that problem. And so I thought, this is great. It's a great opportunity. So he was getting on really well. And apparently it was a mother and daughter combo. And the blind man had mistakenly gone for the mother. So I thought... This is brilliant, because the daughter's still free, and he's, and this woman's chatting away to him, you know, they're getting on really well, so I thought, this is brilliant. Two blind men. I can do the same thing, so I was just about to get my cane out and just approach the woman and say, I smell a woman. But unfortunately, we got to the National Portrait Gallery, and, well, it's no contest, is it? Women or National Portrait Gallery? Well, we got off the train, so unfortunately, I have no idea how that story might have panned out, but there's a gripping anecdote about the National Portrait Gallery to come, ladies and gentlemen. But first, oh God, I think we've got a ballad about death.
Well, the people at our gig might have been treated to a ballad about death, but you, fortunately, not going to get that. If you want to hear ballads about death, come to one of our gigs and you shall hear them. For those people who don't know, basically, the Young'uns in the Mix, generally speaking, is where I do a bit of DJing, and I take a folk song and a popular song or a song from a different genre and I mix it together. And we create a kind of a folk-based mashup. We're kind of, I think it's quite a pioneering feature on the podcast. Well, this time, I wasn't going to do a Young'uns in the Mix, but then we were travelling back from our gig in Upton on Saturday. We were in Sean's car, and we were listening to some Shirley Collins, a folk singer. The CD player started to malfunction, and it kind of did a bit of glitching and jumping and stuff, and then it moved on to the radio. It sort of couldn't take it anymore. The CD just sort of stopped and the radio came on. The result of that is this week's Young'uns in the Mix. This is an organic Young'uns in the Mix caused by Sean Cooney's malfunctioning CD player.
Oh, once they said my cheeks was red, but now they're scarlet pale. When I, like a silly girl, believed his flattering tale. Three vowed he'd never deceive me, and I, like a silly, believed he. For the moon.
I've finally heard back from Animal Health. They've given me the full results from Wolfgang's post-mortem. Good news. Wolfgang died from chronic pneumonia. No sign at all of bovine TB.
So there you are, the CD, it gave up, and then it just put the Archers on, the Archers Omnibus on Radio 4. So I think that's quite an experimental feature, that, you know. I think it's like a kind of weird soundscape, isn't it? I think we can do a few more of those in time. But we'll be back with another, a proper Young'uns in the Mix with actual DJing. I think we're going to try and mix some Prodigy with some sea shanties, I think is what we're going to be doing. Anyway, thank you for listening. This is the Young'uns podcast. Well, last week, just out of curiosity... Oh, sorry, I shouldn't have said that word. Yes, I forgot. Curiosity killed the cat. It was a little bit, I shouldn't have said that in present company. I do apologise. Out of curiosity, I typed into Spotify, the digital music website, I typed in Hartlepool, just to see what came up. That's where I live. That's where sort of the Young'uns are based. You know, that's where we used to be based. And there was only a few tracks on Spotify, and one of them was called Hartlepool United. It was called Get the Goal. Hartlepool United. It's the only Hartlepool United football song on Spotify, so it's the only one there. I thought, okay, well, let's have a listen. This must be, it's a 2012, so this must be the current sort of official Hartlepool United supporters song. Alarm bells started ringing more or less straight away, as soon as the singing began, that perhaps this wasn't quite Hartlepool's official football song. I'm going to play it now. You'll probably get the same impression as I do, but I'll talk you through it anyway, because I'm not massively into football. I'm not a particular massive football fan, but immediately for me, alarm bells started ringing. I don't know all the football terminology and that kind of thing, but immediately alarm bells started ringing, and I'm sure they'll do the same for you. Let's play this song, and I'll talk you through my kind of mind process while I was listening to the song here. So at first I thought, this must be the official Hartlepool United football song. So it's by the group are called Don't Kick the Baby, and it's called Get the Goal, Hartlepool United. So the first thing, pretty obvious, I've heard Hartlepool United football songs before. Generally speaking, they were always, you could hear that there was a local accent there and they were, and that kind of thing. Not here. This is broad American.
From the kick off.
Kick off.
From the kick off to the shootout.
But then I thought, there's something a bit odd about the words. From the kick off to the shootout. But we don't really do shootouts. Because really, we don't do shootouts. I mean, we do...
Penalty shootouts, yes, we do when there's a cup, but not normally.
From the kick off to the shootout, we're ramped up for a breakaway from a set play.
No, hang on a second. What? It says we're gonna break away from a set play. A set play? What the hell's a set play? We don't have set plays in English football. This is more like American football. So now I'm suddenly starting to think, what is going on? This is a Hartlepool United song, but they're using American terms. Not only are they using American terms, but it's clearly sung by an American. So I'm a bit confused at the moment. So we'll continue listening.
Fall and break away from a set play. It's a give and go in the score zone.
In the score zone? We don't have score zones. We don't, that's not an English terminology. We do not have score zones. I've never heard a football commentator say we're in the score zone. In the penalty area, the goal mouth, you never hear a commentator for English football say score zone. So we continue.
Ball a break away from a set play. It's a give and go.
That the Hartlepool United, he's just sang. The Hartlepool United.
Oi, the Hartlepool United.
No one calls them the Hartlepool United. It's Hartlepool United. So I'm starting to think, well, why have these Americans released a song for Hartlepool United? It seems a bit random. They're obviously not Hartlepool United fans because they call them the Hartlepool United. And they're using, and they obviously don't know about football in England because they're using words like set play, score zone. Can we continue?
Oi, the Hartlepool United. Oi, oi, oi,
I cannot understand what that says. I've tried, I just cannot understand what that says.
Oi. Place for the fans today.
It sounds like a bit like attack or team or something, but...
Place for the fans today.
Don't know, plays all the best today? Cannot understand what that says, so I can't make a comment on that, but it's a bit... Anyway, continue.
Place for the fans
Here we go again.
Need a drop kick.
Need a drop kick? Well, you're not going to get one in English football, you bloody idiot. We don't do drop kicks. Free kicks, maybe. We don't do drop kicks.
Need a drop kick.
We don't do drop kicks. We don't do set plays. We don't do score zones. My God. This is a really good football song, this. Oh, these are really Hartlepool United fans. Feel the passion.
Need a drop kick.
Yeah, we do. We need a drop kick.
Ball control. We're talking trash throughout the clash.
We're talking trash throughout the clash. Oh, yeah, because you can imagine that's what all the Hartlepool fans do. Oh, there we were on the terraces talking trash. And again, another Americanism. I thought maybe, at this point, I started to think maybe there's a Hartlepool United in America. So I thought, let's give them the benefit of the doubt here, because I'm assuming that it's Hartlepool United in England. So I had a look, I did some research on Don't Kick the Baby, and the album that this song comes from is called Empower League One. 2012, in Power League One. So I thought, hang on a minute, what's going on here? So I clicked on it, and it turns out, basically, this group, Don't Kick the Baby, have done every single football team in Power League One. Not only that, though, they've done every single football team in the Championship, every single football team in the Premiership, all of the UK divisions, including the Conference. But then it gets worse. They've done all the other leagues as well, including the Australian Hyundai League. They've gone through them all. This is literally a money-making scheme. They've just cobbled together some poorly written song with terms that don't even translate across the board, that only work in America, and they've just thought, right, all we've got to do is we've done the song, we just need to shout the name of every single football team, go through the list, someone will just copy and paste it in, the Hartlepool United, the Tranmere Rovers, the Middlesbrough FC, and then we'll just sell them on iTunes and Spotify and stuff and make our millions. And I'm wondering how much money this group are making through this.
We're talking trash throughout the clash. We'll ride the pine.
We'll ride the what?
That does it, I don't know what that. I can't understand what the accent's so broad and thick. I cannot understand what he's saying. We'll ride the pine. I think it sounds like he says we'll ride the paint.
We'll ride the pine.
We'll ride the. Oh, is he saying pain? Hang on.
We'll ride the pine during overtime.
I think he might be saying pain, but he's rhymed it with time overtime. So he says we'll ride the pine bearing overtime.
We'll ride the pine during overtime.
Yeah, that's what he must be saying. We'll ride the pain. Yeah, yeah. It's a real hard to put accent you got there, sir.
We'll ride the pine during overtime.
Overtime? We don't do overtime. Overtime, we do extra time, you bloody fool. We
ride the pine during overtime when our team keeps on scoring.
Oh, you've rhymed team with scoring. Brilliant. It's really well packaged together, this, as you can hear. Anyway, they've done all of the teams in the football leagues across the world. Unbelievable. So we've got
The Barnsley FC.
It's the same song. Right, this is ridiculous. No one calls Birmingham City the Birmingham City team. Not called. Firstly, they're not called the Birmingham City. They're called Birmingham City. And secondly, you don't put team at the end of it. I just want to play a couple more because it gets worse. They've kind of done some pronouncing wrong on some of them. Imagine if you were a Derby County supporter. Imagine how disgruntled you would be. This song is called "Don't Kick the Baby, Get the Goal, Derby Country." Derby Country. Hang on a minute. Maybe it's just spelt wrong. Maybe it's just a misprint. Of course, they're not going to really sing the Derby Country. They're going to know that it's Derby County. Surely they've done the research here. They know there's no country called the Derby Country. Well, no. What? I mean, that's wrong on every single level. They're not the. They don't put the in the front of their name. They're not the Derby County. Oh, sorry. They're certainly not that. Although some people, their rivals, might dispute that. They may say, yes, they are, David, I think you'll find. But they're certainly not the Derby County. And imagine how annoyed you'd be if you were a Peterborough United fan and you get "Don't Kick the Baby, Get the Goal, Peterborough." They don't even pronounce it Peterborough. It's worse than that. Petersburg United. Well, it's not Russian. This is Peterborough United. This is their song. And they expect people who are Peterborough fans to listen to this, to buy this song. Oh, Petersburg United. Oh, well, never mind. It's such a good song. It's a shame they've got our name wrong. It's such a good song. We'll forgive them. It's worth the money. We'll just shout loudly over the top for that bit. You know, from the kickoff to the shootout, we're brilliant at those. You know, we always break away from a set play, Petersburg United. We always do. Well, there we go, ladies and gentlemen. So that's "Don't Kick the Baby, Get the Goal," and with a lot of mistakes. And bearing in mind, I haven't gone through them all. I mean, obviously, I haven't spent time going through them all. I'm sure that's just, what, three or four mistakes, massive mistakes in one football league. Anyway, that has inspired me. Believe it or not, I've got an idea. I wonder how much money they make. They must make a little bit of money. And you can put stuff on digital distribution sites like Spotify and iTunes, you can do all that for free. So what I thought was, well, why, in that case, why don't I make my own football song? So what I'll do is I'll create a football song of my own, and then I'll just kind of overdub the names of the different football clubs. I'll put them on Spotify and iTunes and that kind of thing, and Napster, and we'll just distribute it, and we'll see how much money we make. I was going to suggest that it was going to be the Young'uns football anthem, but then I thought the record label might not be particularly happy if, when you type in the Young'uns, you get 200 or 300 football songs, all exactly the same, but just slightly different names. I thought they might be a bit annoyed about that, especially since they're not getting any of the money. So I'm going to have to probably release it under either my name or maybe a pseudonym. So I'm going to showcase my generic football anthem next week on the Young'uns podcast. And it's back to London we go for the final time this week.
So what did happen in that portrait gallery, sir?
So basically, we got in there and we said, because on the website it boasts that this is the must-see experience for blind people. So I thought, well, this has got to be it. So it apparently had tactile portraits, it had braille information and audio description as well. So it had they were going for the whole thing. So we got in there and it brags on their website in bold letters that this is a thing for blind people, the best experience of blind people ever. And I mean, they've obviously never sniffed tea. But
or touch old rope and old wood. But other than that, it's the best experience ever. So we went in there and we strolled in, and Ben said, "Oh, we're wondering for the display of the blind people." And she panicked. She went, "Oh my God, oh no, no, let me just call." So she goes, "We have a visually impaired person on his care of. They want to know about the thing for the visually impaired. And I thought, "You don't say it like it's a secret. It's on your website in big bold letters." So, I mean, even I could see it, for God's sake. So, anyway, so what happened was we got there, and eventually, and then they got another member of staff over. "Oh, I don't know anything about this." And another member of staff, the manager, came and said, "I've been working here for 2 years. There's never been a single blind person coming to the National Portrait." So eventually, they said, "I think I know where it is." And they were about 10 minutes. And eventually, you heard like a lot of creaking and weird sounds. And then eventually, they come and they brought through a couple of dusty braille books. Dusty books. Oh, we found them. They were really proud of themselves. So anyway, we walked through. But what was really strange was these descriptions are massively detailed. So I was like reading them out to Ben about what was going on. But people must have thought that I was a weird tour guide or something like that. So everyone congregated. So if anyone just walked in, the sort of blind man kind of going, "And as you can see, everybody, there's the crenulated shoulders there. A lovely effect, of course, used primarily in the 1820s. Let's move on now, everybody." And people were following me. It was the weirdest experience. I'm thinking I could raise money. I mean, forget this folk lark. There's no money in folk music, but I'm thinking of maybe doing like some kind of art tour. Maybe team up with Brian Sewell or something like that. Who knows where it might go?
There we are. That's all he sees, the stories. All in a day's work, David. Yeah, all in a day's work.
Of course, man.
Thank you very much for listening. The Young'uns Podcast, I forgot to announce this, we're starting, this is a new series of podcasts. It's the first podcast of the new year, and it's the first in a series of weekly podcasts. We're going to be going weekly again. So just nonchalantly announced that. It should have been a big announcement at the start of the programme, but never mind. I was too excited about the whole cat thing. Also, as well, something that I haven't mentioned on this week's podcast, but it was Graham Miles, the Teesside songwriter, Graham Miles. We mentioned in the last podcast, or the second last podcast that we did, when we spoke to Becky Unthank, we talked quite a bit about Graham Miles, a real hero of ours and of many folk singers and folk fans as well. And we will be doing something on the podcast about Graham Miles, celebrating his music and his life. We will be doing something in the near future. Thank you very much to our guests this week. Thank you to Jim Molyneux from the Old School Dance Band and Foursquare. Thank you to journalist Emma Hartley.
Right, I see you're taking the piss now slightly.
Yeah. Thank you, Emma. Thank you very much for listening. We'll be back next week. Till then, from me, David Eagle, and of course the other two young'uns as well, goodbye.
Right, I see you're taking the piss now slightly.